The New Mexico Rural Heritage Oral History Project is a collaboration between anthropologists at New Mexico State University and the Oral History Program at the New Mexico Farm and Ranch Heritage Museum in Las Cruces, New Mexico. The goal of the project was to record the memories of New Mexicans who grew up in rural parts of the state in the first half of the 20th century. This podcast brings together some of those stories. For many people in the Southwest, religion, spirituality, and healing are intertwined. Whether it's because religion is part of a healing practice or because religion is often a way to cope with and make sense of illness and death. In the following stories, these themes often came together in some surprising ways. Grady McCullough was born in 1928 in San Angelo, Texas. He moved to House, New Mexico when he was 2 years old. His family were homesteaders. In this first clip, Grady talks about his local schoolhouse that also served as a church.
Our place was one of about three in the community that the kids gathered on Sunday afternoon. We had a community Sunday school and church in the schoolhouse, and the Methodist preacher preached on the first and third Sunday, and the Baptist on the second and fourth, and the Church of Christ on fifth Sundays.
Kay Bird was born April 7, 1928, in Savannah, Georgia. When the Depression hit, her father sent her and her sister to live with their grandfather in Elephant Butte. He later joined them and they moved to Hot Springs, or present-day Truth or Consequences. There, Kay and her sister would join the local church at the request of their friar.
There was a very small membership in the church, very small congregation, and the friar needed altar boys. Well, there weren't enough boys, so my sister and I were inducted. We were probably 7 and 8 years old, and we were also called altar boys. They pretended that we weren't girls, I guess, and we wore long black skirts for the services, long black mm-hmm. skirts and white surplices with lace at the bottom, and we would usually just stand and look holy or something.
Unfortunately, this was also a time when polio was a huge concern, as little was known about the disease.
Once the friar conscripted us, he called my mother and said we were needed at the church for a service. So she sent us, and the service was a funeral for a little girl who had died at Carrie Tingley Hospital. And we, the altar boys, we had to wear our outfits and stand around the coffin. And I happened to be at the head of the coffin. And we were very uncomfortable. It was hot. It was miserably hot. And we were perspiring. And the incense made me kind of sick. The friar was very formal with everything. And there was incense. And I was standing there. And a fly landed on her face. She was a beautiful little girl with long blonde curls, and she was dressed in a beautiful pink dress, and the coffin was lined with white satin, and I thought, oh, that was very beautiful. But this fly was falling on her face, and I was standing there, and I just couldn't stand it anymore. It crawled up her nose, and then it crawled out. I was going to pieces, and so finally I went like that. And the friar glared at me, so I didn't. And at that time, everyone was scared to death of polio. Everybody was scared to death. We didn't know how it was spread. And my mother would have been really unhappy to know that we were called to that funeral, because everyone was superstitious about polio. I went home and vomited. I told my mother that I just kind of felt sick or something.
Different health concerns would require people to solve health issues creatively. Up next, we get an example from Ann Hoffman. Her family was originally from Michigan. They first moved to Arizona and then to New Mexico so that her father could be a missionary. She talks about a mother trying to solve her baby's nutritional needs.
This is Edith and Walter Jones.
She was showing a photo album during the interview and is referring to a few old photos of them.
Walter was a very big baby. He was in a cradle board. His mother, Edith, would come often to sew. And when she did, Walter would cry. And my mother said to Edith, "You know, I think the baby's hungry." She was still breastfeeding him. He was very big. She said, he's not getting enough to eat, Edith. Let's take him to the doctor. So we took him to the doctor. Doctor agreed with my mother, baby needed more food. And the answer, of course, was formula. So we went to the store and we bought bottles and nipples and, you know, everything she needed to make food. We showed her how and gave them to her, and she went home. She came back shortly after. Walter was still crying and crying and crying. My mother said, are you giving him the formula? Edith said, he don't like it. And another characteristic or tradition was they never made their babies do anything, their children. That was just not done. And the children were, by and large, very well behaved.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was never a problem. But it was clear this wasn't going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother, being really concerned about Walter's survival, kept encouraging Edith to do it. Well, then Edith got annoyed, and she didn't come back for quite a while. And when she came back, Walter was this fat little toddler running around all over the place. And my mother said, what happened to Walter? And Edith said, well, she explained, they were sitting around fire in the hogan one night drinking coffee, and they always had a can, an open can of evaporated milk, their coffee. Well, Walter discovered the can, picked it up, and drank the whole thing down straight. And after that, they could not keep an open can of pet milk around because Walter would drink it. So Walter solved his own problem.
Home remedies were often used by families in rural New Mexico, as described in these next few clips. Here, once again, is Grady McCullough.
When I was, must have been about 4, I was sitting on what we called a go-devil. It's a sled with knives on the side, but at the back, you have 3 discs on each side that after the knives had cut the weeds in the bed, you went down, the sled went right down the furrow, straddling your crop. Then the disc pulled the dirt in on the crop to cultivate it. And I had caught a baby rabbit and was sitting on the seat of the cultivator. Warm morning in summer. Evidently, I went half to sleep and fell off. And my dad fortunately looked back as he saw me fall and stopping the team, he stepped the opposite direction he was standing on the wings, the platform, and he stepped to the left side to lift the weight off so that it lifted the disc over. But the disc went here, across here, and across my leg. I bore scars of that. They pretty well disappeared in the 90 years since, but.
And what did you do during that time? Was there a hospital, or what did you do when something like that happened?
Fortunately, my mother had nurse's training, was an LPN, and she took care of it with home remedies.
Jerry Navarez was born in 1952 in his grandmother's house in San Miguel, New Mexico. He had 6 siblings. Growing up, Jerry's family owned 14 acres of land south of La Mesa.
I still remember that for headaches, my mother would slice like a potato, raw potato with vinegar and then with a handkerchief, she would put it on her head to kind of cure a headache. I don't know if that really works or not. Different things for your teeth or gum, you know, problems and things that I still don't remember exactly what was being used. For fever, and again, these are things that I saw basically, but the tomato, a raw tomato, boiling water, smashed up, put in a towel and then put it on the bottom of your feet, supposedly to draw out the fever. So it just depends. There were also people that were called curanderas, the people would go to, you know, they would do different things. Okay. So either took care of it that way or you tried to make it to a doctor.
Rini Martinez was one of 11 children and was born and raised in Santa Fe. Her grandparents lived in El Rancho, New Mexico. She describes ways her grandmother would take everyday items and use them to heal.
Of course, on my grandmother and my dad's side, like I told you, she would use the beans and the potatoes and herbs, different herbs, which I don't remember those herbs, but she would, you know, like put them behind her ear here. And I remember her doing that, and we would laugh. Me and my sisters would laugh. I said, look at it, Grandma's putting beans on her face. Another thing she would use, at that time, she had smoked, and she would have the little, I'll never forget this, the package of cigarettes, it'd have a stamp on it, a little blue stamp. Do you remember that? Mm-hmm. She'd easily pull off the stamp. And I don't know why it had to do, whatever it meant, she would put stamps on our forehead too, the cigarette stamp. She would save them and she'd lick them and she'd put them on us. And you know, I never had a sore throat for the longest time, but I was, after a little older, I was very prone to sore throats, I had bad sore throats.
Lucinda Vigil, Rini's cousin, also grew up in Santa Fe. She shares a story of a healing method using aceite volcánico, or volcanic oil, a type of elixir used for aches and pains. Lucinda was interviewed in her childhood home, which has now been converted into a restaurant called the Tea House. You may hear a bit of the dinner rush in the background.
I don't know if you've ever heard of aceite volcánico oil. It's a liniment, and my grandmother used to use that a lot. Like if anybody broke their ribs, they would rub that on there. It smells like gasoline. And I remember my cousin Yolanda said to me one day, she said, you know, I was really sick in Taos. I was working as a ski instructor in Taos in 2000. And she said, if you take a spoon of that, of whole sugar, and put some of that aceite volcánico oil, that'll get rid of your cold. I couldn't smell and I couldn't taste. And so I did it in front of all those young kids. And they were all like, are you crazy? It worked.
Bronson Springstead was born in 1936 in Chaco Canyon. His father, who went by the nickname Colonel, owned a trading post. Bronson remembers the different types of elixirs that were sold there.
They sold a lot of product called Mexican oil. And it was
kind of... Mexicano? It was a glass bottle.
Yes, a glass bottle. And they used it just about for everything. I mean, if you, you know, smashed your hand, well, you just rub some Mexican oil on it. If you had a headache, we'll rub that Mexican oil on your forehead. So Mexican oil was one of our big sellers. And tincture of methylate had alcohol in it, burned. They sold a lot of that. It had a glass, not a dropper, a glass stem. You dip it in there and it was red. And you'd put it on a cut. Just burn, I mean really burn. But if somebody came in with a sore throat, really bad sore throat, my mother would take a pair of forceps looking things with a cotton ball and soak it in that tincture methylate, had them open their mouth and just swab around their tonsils. And you talk about cure them, if it would. And then the other big seller was a mustard plaster. And there were squares about like this, and they were just in paper wrappers. So what you did is take the wrappers off and soak it in hot water, and then put that mustard plaster on their chest, and then they take the other layer of paper off and leave it on there until it dried.
Billy Poindexter was born on March 31st, 1932 in Portales, New Mexico. Billy's parents moved to New Mexico on a wagon. They would later have 13 children. One specific cure that Billy recalls involved solving a stomach ailment.
No, we didn't even know what doctors was. We black draught. You know what black draught is? It's a kind of a powder like snuff, and you take it, and then you sit on a two-holer all the time.
Just for reference, black draught is a laxative, and a two-holer is another name for an outhouse. Monty Shriver was born in El Dorado in 1934 and grew up in Aztec, New Mexico. Here, he talks about more home remedies, but also going into Farmington, New Mexico for surgeries.
Well, I remember I had ringworm roots, and they put turpentine on it, and I ran screaming through the house. Uh-huh. One time I went up, and apparently they'd had an operation, and you could smell the ether, the chloroform. It was in the neighborhood, because that's what they used for anesthesia then. I remember I had to have my tonsils out in Farmington, and just remember I had a very sore throat afterwards. But the concern was it would start bleeding back then. And back then it was pretty common for everyone to have their tonsils and adenoids out. I'm not even sure what adenoids are, but.
Felipe Baca was born in 1928 and spent most of his childhood living in La Cienega in Galisteo. He talks about a different type of health concern, one that involved supernatural elements.
The belief was that if you name Juan or Juanita, and at that time there was a lot of witchcraft done, you know, everybody practiced witchcraft. And if somebody was trying to practice witchcraft on you, and you surrounded that particular item or animal or whatever it was, wore your clothes inside out. If your name is Juan, you know, or Juanita, and you draw a circle around it, wherever the animal is, with your foot, dragging your foot, you know, and that animal will come and run and stop at that line and go right back. It will not cross that line.
Luis Gabaldon was born in 1940 and grew up in Irizarry, south of Tejeras, in the 1950s. He also addresses having to deal with witchcraft.
The only thing I sort of remember, not very well, they would talk about hanging crosses over the windows, over the walls, to keep the witches out. And also, now that reminds me of a pine tree that was sitting right close to the wall. And there was this owl that hung out there. And they said that they were superstitious, I guess. They thought that might have been a witch. And in order to kill that witch, the old man had to put a cross on the bullet of his, I don't know if he took a bit, I think it was a rifle that he took out there and tried to shoot that owl, but he'd already made a cross on the bullet. I never heard the shot. I never knew anything whether he shot the owl or not.
For many in rural New Mexico, religion and health go hand in hand. For example, Kay Bird's earlier story where she was asked to be a part of a funeral service during the polio epidemic. To wrap up this episode, we have Amado Mares, who was born in 1934, and Labeo Martinez, who was born in 1930. They each talk about funerary practices in the early 1900s.
I remember going to one funeral here when I was
maybe 4 or 5 years old. And we went in a wagon to the Espinosa Ranch here, 2 miles, and all I remember is that we got there. Her name was, I can't remember her name. She was pretty old. I remember we got there in a wagon. My dad went, I don't know, a miracle. He was with us that night. We went like in the early, we got there in the early evening. And I remember all these men had a big bonfire outside. And I remember they were passing a little bottle, probably moonshine. Or maybe whiskey, I don't know. They were passing it around. And they weren't having any problems at all. And the body was inside one of the bedrooms. And one of the men, his name was Valentin Trujillo. He was doing the singing. I guess you've heard of the alabados, you know, like a chant. But they were words. And he was pretty good at it. And I remember that he was kneeling down in the room singing to her, like a farewell deal, you know. And I walked in, and this is kind of haunting. I was a little scared, but I enjoyed the voice, a real rich voice. And I was there like maybe an hour listening. And I was going back and forth, and it was already starting to smell, because she'd been there like six days. Out of respect. And everybody was there, you know, mm-hmm. Neighbors. And then later on, I guess around midnight, we come home.
Labeo mentions that most people in those days died relatively young. His grandmother passed away in her 70s. He talks about her funeral service when he was a young boy.
I remember I was like 8 years old. And she died like at 4 or 5 in the afternoon. She died at home in the bed right there. And I remember the neighbors coming over and stuff like that. Before, over the night, they got her ready, and they dressed her, and all the men got together, building a box of casket in the porch. later at night they put in the casket. They not only built the casket, but the ladies put some nice clothes on the outside to make it look nice and everything. And they put her in the casket, and I remember just carrying the casket to the church the next morning into the cemetery. In other words, you have to do everything before 24 hours.
That concludes this episode of the New Mexico Rural Heritage Oral History Project. All interviews were conducted or supervised by Kelly Jenks, Mary Alice Scott, Kayla Archuleta Brown, and Mariah Ballard. On behalf of New Mexico State University, I'm Jose Loera. Thank you for tuning in. This oral history project was made possible in part by a grant from the New Mexico Humanities Council. Additional funding was provided by the Loomis Foundation and the Southwestern Border Cultures Institute at New Mexico State University. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed in this presentation do not necessarily represent those of the National Endowment for the Humanities, the New Mexico Humanities Council, or New Mexico State University. The full interviews are available at the New Mexico Farm and Ranch Heritage Museum in Las Cruces, New Mexico. More information is available at the museum website at nmfarmandranchmuseum.org.